Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm your host and Phoenix Business Radio Ambassador, Kendra Maples. Today on the show, we have Mitch Korob, owner of Royal Commercial Real Estate. I have a little bit about you as far as kind of your involvement with this company that you are the owner of. Royal Commercial Real Estate was formed with the founding members when they decided that there had to be a better approach to commercial real estate. So I have a little bit of an insight as to what that better approach was. But Mitch, I wanted to kind of toss it over to you and jump right in about what was that focus.
Well, thank you, Kendra. So our focus when we first started this was we've been in the business between me and my partner over 30 years. And just to see kind of the environment that there was with commercial real estate, a lot of cutthroat, a lot of backstabbing, a lot of there's the splits with different companies. Doesn't matter who you're with. I won't really mention any of them, but the splits are what they are. You know, there's always fees involved. So when you get a listing, it's like, you know, you get your split with the company. And then when you actually sell the property, then it's like, oh, by the way, you know, it's going to be an extra X number of dollars because you put a sign up. There's X number of marketing fee. There's X number because you need to buy your broker a Ferrari fee. And, you know, we kind of saw those fees and we were looking at like our paychecks when we're done with these deals. And it's like there just has to be a better way. So our whole focus was to make it an agent-friendly environment where there is no cutthroat, there is no backstabbing. It is a true split where whatever we tell you your split is, that's just the end of the day, the split. We'll take care of the signs, the, you know, the marketing expenses, all that. That comes out of what the cut is. So it's just more of a family-friendly environment type of deal. So it's a lot smaller. Everyone gets along. It's just laid back, just, you know, there's no micromanaging. It's, you know, do your job the way you think you need to get it done.
Yeah.
As opposed to me telling you how to get it done.
And everything that I've read about it, it says that it's very much that individual approach. So kind of every case, every situation is different and unique.
Correct. I mean, that's just commercial real estate in general, right? Like every business is different. So that's a conversation we have to have with every owner is, You're usually not going to walk into a space that's like, oh my God, this is the perfect space for me. There's always going to be, you have to build it out. You're going to have to do this. You're going to have to customize it to your certain needs. So listening to the client and what their specific needs is, every restaurant's not the same. Every batting cage isn't the same. No matter what the business is, they're never going to be identical to just move in, walk in space.
Mm-hmm. And your focus is buy and leasing of commercial real estate, correct?
Correct.
Have you done kind of private real estate on the side of, you know, helping mom and pops find a new house? Or has your focus always been more on the commercial side?
I've always been on the commercial side. Even when I've moved houses 3 times in the last 5 years. I hire a residential agent to help me with that. Like
you don't even do it on your own just able to get it over with?
The amount of paperwork they have is unbelievable. Like they always say like, oh, you do commercial, it's so hard. And I look at them like, no. What I do is simple. What you guys is hard. You know, and a lot of it, I think, because, you know, residential is very, very regulated. There's ethics clauses. It's just, you're a realtor. It's very regulated. So they have whatever it is, 10, 20, 30 documents that you got to sign. And a lot of it's to protect the agents and the agencies because there's so many of them out there. In commercial, we're not regulated the same way. So that's another important reason why you have to know the commercial agents or brokers that you're working with, because there is no regulation the same way as residential. So, you know, I talked to a guy who's he's essentially an expert witness here in Arizona. And when cases come down in real estate, he said 90% of the commercial real estate cases that go to court are residential agents trying to do a commercial deal.
Oh.
And he asked them, why did they try to do it? And they all say, because I wanted a paycheck. And it's like, well, and here you are.
Yeah.
So, and I kind of feel the same way about residential. I could fill out the paperwork and I'm legally able to do it. You know, I just bought a property up in Pine and I have a residential agent representing me. I could sign the paperwork and get that done myself and get a lower price, but I want it done right and I want the little ins and outs to be known.
Interesting. Why is it that, you know, residential is regulated, but commercial isn't as much?
Technically, in real estate, you could choose to be a realtor.
Okay.
And being a realtor puts you you're part of the associations, whether that's the Southeast Valley Real Estate Association or SEVRAR, or, you know, the Scottsdale Real Estate Association or Realtor Association. And you have to be a realtor if your broker is a realtor or any member of your firm is a realtor. So in residential, every firm, their brokers are realtors, which means every agent has to be a realtor. And when you're a realtor, the realtor code has those ethics clauses into it. Whereas if you look at commercial, I'd say 90%+ are not realtors. So they don't have that ethics clause involved. Now, you should have that ethics clause anyways in your head and do the right thing.
Yeah.
But it's not mandated the certain way. You know, for us, in residential, you have a boilerplate contract, mm-hmm. right? And you just fill in the blanks and every single one's the same. In commercial, I've done so many deals. I've probably looked at 50 separate contracts, like different formats of contracts. So they're not all boilerplate. They all say the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's not boilerplate where it's like fill in A, B, C, like I could do it in my sleep. Because some of them, I just get a new contract. I'm like, okay, got to read this one over and make sure that everything's in here the same way it is in all the other ones. And it is. They're just in different places. So the fill in the blanks are in different places. And you just got to be a little bit more careful that way.
Gotcha. So is the training and the background and classes and things like that to get to where you are, is it very different when you're doing residential versus commercial?
So...
Or they kind of some of the same.
If you have an Arizona real estate license, you can do either one or both if you choose. You're licensed. Like, I could do my own houses.
Okay.
I could go help you buy a house. I wouldn't recommend that to you, but I could.
I don't know where I want to buy my next house.
Right, but I'm legally allowed to represent you in the residential field.
Okay.
But if you want to do one right and you want to do one well, you need to really specialize in one. There's no way to know everything about residential and what a kitchen's worth and a bathroom's worth in a certain neighborhood and know what an industrial property and a retail property in a different area is worth at the same time.
Yeah.
There's just too much information to be able to be an expert in everything.
Oh, I can imagine. Especially right now, I feel like from my experience, I'm seeing a couple of friends and family members that are tapping into that residential real estate. You know, they feel like, oh, I can do this in between, you know, my other job and fill some loose ends.
Right. And that's another thing is commercial is essentially a 9-to-5 job.
Like, yeah.
We don't really work on weekends. I'll always answer clients, email, stuff like that on weekends. But, you know, if you called me and said, I want to look at a place on a Saturday and a Friday afternoon, there's almost no way I'm going to be able to get a hold of the other agent and get them in there on a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more of a 9-to-5 job. So to work it around your other job as a hobby, it's not really going to work in commercial. It could work in residential because a lot of times it's people who work 9-to-5.
Yeah.
They go see houses at night. They go see houses on the weekend. So you can make that work.
Gotcha. And what led you to the position you are with being the owner of this company? What was kind of your experience and what built up to this point?
So my background is I'm originally from Chicago and I was actually a teacher in Chicago.
Oh, nice.
So when we decided to move here, you know, I called, I actually got a job teaching. And when I talked to HR department and found out what the salary was, I thought they were joking. And I was like,
sadly,
well, that can't work. Like that's not a real number. So from there, I kind of had to reassess. And my background is in economics. So when I was still in Chicago, I did about a 1-year internship with a couple guys I know that were doing commercial real estate. So that's kind of how I got into commercial real estate. Then when I moved here, I was super fortunate that my mentor back from Chicago, he started in REITs, which are real estate investment trusts. And those are people that are doing $30, $40, $50, $60 million deals where they're looking to buy a grocery anchored shopping center. So a Fry's with the entire shopping center. So I just got to learn a ton from him. I didn't really know anything at the beginning, so I would just sit there on phone calls and just listen to him talk to the other agent or talk to the owners or talk to whoever it was. And I just really learned that way of just how to get it done. And then, you know, I kind of transitioned from that into more of the local market because those are really, really big deals. You know, those are gigantic paychecks, but, you know, they fall through a lot and it's one a year or whatever it is. So I just went more into the consistent stream. So when I was down here, so when I started doing the local market, it was just seeing a lot of those like smaller paychecks, the amount of money being taken away out of the, you know, total of the check. I mean, I can give you an example. Pretty much the last one I did was I bought a place for a guy for an office space. He wound up buying too much space and he knew that. But instead of growing into it, he asked me if I could help him just lease out 1,000 square feet of office. I'm like, all right, I could, you know, I'll help you do that. So it wasn't a big paycheck. Like my total commission on the thing was $1,000, somewhere right around there. And then after all the splits and this and that, whatever, I looked at the paycheck and it was $82. I was like, well.
So you're not doing it for the paycheck.
Right. So this, so I'm not a, you know, I'm not a non-for-profit here. So I got to figure out why this is. And I was talking to my partner now, Robert Poe, about it. It was kind of the same mentality. So we kind of have that as the background for the company is when we tell you what the split is, there's no hidden fees behind that. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody signs up for an 8% split.
Yeah.
So that wasn't my agreed upon split. It's just after all the hidden fees behind it. When they're huge paychecks, like you don't notice $500 here.
But yeah,
when they're smaller and you tend to notice it, that's so that's kind of what led me here.
Awesome. And then what led you to partnering with Robert? I know he's not in the studio with us today, but how did you guys get connected and start this?
So the last brokerage we were at, me and him were, we just always got along. We have very similar views on commercial real estate in general, our backgrounds on it, our ethics on it. And that's probably the most important thing is how we view it and how to be upfront about everything. You know, never take the shortcuts on anything, never try to hide any information. That was one of the major things I learned doing those gigantic deals is, you know, that guy told me is like, if you know something, just disclose it. Mm-hmm. Don't, just because you don't have to disclose it doesn't mean don't disclose it, because what's going to happen is 30, 40, 50 days from now, someone's going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And when they figured it out, you just wasted 30, 40, 50 days because the deal's going to get canceled over that. You'd rather not start the deal than waste that amount of time to have it canceled at that point.
Yeah.
Whereas I do see a lot of times where information's getting hidden, hoping it never gets found. And I do see a lot of times where it doesn't get found.
So you mentioned 30, 40, 50 days when it comes to some of these deals. What is the usual timeline for a deal? That's a long time. That's a long process.
Yeah. So I would, so the standard amount of time is typically we write 30 days worth of due diligence into a deal.
Okay.
And then after that is typically another 30 to 45 days, depending on the funding.
Gotcha. So, in addition to that original
In addition 30. To the 30 days. So okay. On a house, you would have a 10-day due diligence, mm-hmm. and then you close at 30 days. So with us, we're 30 days of due diligence, and then you close somewhere between 45 and 90 days would be standard. Okay. But it's really just based on lending. So if you're doing an all-cash deal, you do 30 days, close next day. If you're doing an SBA loan, those typically take a little bit longer because they're government loans. Mm-hmm. So that you might need the 75 to 90 days. And those are more of like the quicker standard ones. There's definitely times where things sit in escrow for a 6 months worth of due diligence. Or, you know, we just had one that was 90-day due diligence plus two 90-day extensions.
Oh, wow.
And that was based on the owner was selling a property in Texas, and he was going to use that money to 1031 into this property.
Oh,
so
okay.
He's waiting for that deal to close. So he just built in those extensions based on how quickly he could sell that. And if he didn't sell that in those time frames, then he would have just paid cash for it. But he wanted to use that money.
Okay. So that 90-day due diligence, oh, that's a tough word. What is happening during that time? It's just a waiting game?
No, the due diligence is when you do everything.
Gotcha.
So if you're doing just an owner user, like you're buying a house, you know, I always try to go back to residential so people can associate it. But that's what you're doing, like your inspection. You're making sure the AC works. You're making sure, you know, if there's termites or make sure the bathrooms are working and all the water. That's what you do during that time frame. If you're doing an investment property, that's where you need more time because that's where you're gathering, you know, let's say you're buying an apartment building. Well, I want to see the leases from all the people in the apartment buildings. I want you to prove to me that they're paying X number of dollars a month. I know you told me what they're paying, but now I want to see the leases to prove that they're due a day. I want to see how long those leases are good for. So you're gathering tons of information. You want to know how much is that owner paying a month in water or electric? Is he passing that off to the tenants? Is that in their lease? Is he paying it? So you got to really put a lot of numbers together, and that's what you're doing during those 30 days.
Gotcha. I love this conversation and that you're letting me ask very amateur questions because I know nothing about real estate, and especially when it's, from commercial and that type as well. I have a couple of family members that are realtors, so I hope they don't realize I'm asking such amateur questions, but you're being awesome with your answers to me. Now, one of the things that I know is that you have done all the way from small startup companies up to large corporate clients. How does that look different as far as the smaller startups to the larger clients? Or is that process still essentially the same thing?
So the process essentially start to finish is the same, right?
Okay.
So $50 million to a REIT is the same thing as $500 to me and you, right? So if you're investing $500, well, that might be important to you. These guys are doing $50 million where it's the same amount of money, right? So it's all relative term. And to Eli's peoples, it's always going to be their biggest purchase or one of their biggest purchases. So I treat everybody exactly the same, whether they're a startup or been in it. I guess the biggest difference is that first conversation with the startup. Like yesterday, I actually talked to somebody who's legitimately a startup. Like they have this great idea. And it's going to be a great business and a great location. They've just never had any experience in that field before.
Oh, wow.
So it's like they don't know how much money they can actually make doing it. They don't know how much money they could do if they did it a certain way. They don't know how much they can afford in rent. So that's obviously a different conversation than having a guy who's like, yeah, I'm opening up my fifth restaurant. I know exactly what I could afford. I exactly know where I want to be. And this is my budget. And this is what I need done. So the beginning conversation's different, but the process is relatively the same.
But know? That's what's unique with you guys is that you do focus on the individuals in
exactly.
that situation.
So, you know, a lot of people, especially owners or people who do well, they're not even taking that phone call. If they do, they're going to give you like, here's what you need to do. And then they never follow up with you.
Gotcha.
Whereas for me, it's not so much about, I know it's going to be a small paycheck because it's a startup looking for small retail space. It's still a client that I could help, you know, grow their dreams and get done what they want to get done.
Yeah. So how do you set yourself apart with other companies and other brokers so that people do know the individual take that you guys have on working with folks?
I think with us, it's just a matter of networking. We have referrals, just tons of referrals. You know, the amount of time that we spend with clients is probably more than most people do, you know, in terms of an individual, because we don't have a lot of teams working for us. So it is the individual has to take care of almost everything for themselves. You get to some of these teams, you know, and I've worked with a bunch of these teams and they're great, but you send out an email, you get a response from person A the first time they respond to you, you respond back, then you get a response from person B, then you get a response from person C. So it's a lot less personal. It's more of a business transaction.
Huh. So having this experience and, you know, talking about this commercial real estate and the process you've been through, your background, though, you mentioned that you have an education background in economics. Has that helped you in this situation with understanding the economy and the change and the growth?
Well, I think where it's helped me the most is twofold. Is one is with my clients, it helps me educate them, whereas I have the background in that. To know how people learn and what they need to hear and what they need to see versus just dumping them a ton of information, being like, read this on your own time and get back to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, and some people are good like that, right? And some people need to hear it and some people need to see it. And you can get that feel because of my background. Like, I've talked to so many people and taught so many people that I know what certain people need to hear or see or say or whatever. So I can communicate a little bit better that way. You know, and the second one is kind of part of why I started this firm is, I like growing new agents and teaching them how to do stuff. So I have some agents in my office, they'll call me, be like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do this. And I'm more than happy to sit there and spend as much time as they need to teach them how to do it the right way. Whether that's writing a lease or writing a contract or talking to a client or coming to a listing meeting or, you know, whatever they need.
That's fantastic, though, because you're taking the time to build these agents that maybe are newer to this. How many agents do you guys have that you work with?
So right now we have six. Two of them were brand new to the industry when they started. Two of them were transplants here from out of town. And I'm actually working on a relatively large team we're looking to bring over.
So, nice. You're bringing them from somewhere else?
Yeah, from another agency, hopefully. Ooh. So
you're stealing them.
Well, that's kind of how the business works. Is yep. If I can give you more, it's essentially a pay increase, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit there and micromanage you and tell you you have to make X number of calls a day and X number of calls a week and X number of appointments a week. If you want to go golfing 5 days a week and you're hitting the numbers that me and you talked about at the beginning of the year and you're happy with that and we're both happy with that and you're hitting that, then good for you.
Nice. This sounds fantastic.
Right. Good for you.
So during that process and that negotiation process of bringing new folks on, what do you, in that conversation, do you have like your points of why they should work with you and why they should join you and Robert in this journey? Do you have kind of
your,
like, this
is yes and no. It's more of like, why are you looking to leave your company? Mm-hmm. And how can I make that happen for you? So it's me and Robert, we're not publicly traded. We don't have like, you know, SOPs all over the place where you have to fit certain check boxes. It's just me and Robert.
Yeah.
Right? So like if you do something that's not ordinary or that's what you need to get it done, well, we could sit back and go, you know what? That'll work for us. Like, we can make that happen for you. Now we can get that done.
Gotcha. And then what about, you said you have two newer folks that are completely new to the industry.
Right. So when they started, now it's been about a year and a half.
Okay.
So when they first started, it was obviously like brand new to real estate. So no residential background, just straight into the game. And it's just a lot of learning as you go and ask me questions. If I sit there and give you our PowerPoint presentation on something, you're probably not going to be able to translate that into the field. But when you're in the field and you don't know any of that, then just come to me.
Yeah.
And then I can walk you through it page by page, because then it's something that you can apply and it makes sense to you, whereas the next time you can apply it, it'll make sense again. Mm-hmm. So for those agents, I'm around 24/7. Whenever they have phone calls, whenever they don't know something, I try to help out as much as I can, and I'm just there to help them and teach them and be around.
That's awesome. Were you nervous in the beginning with bringing on staff these partners that had no idea?
No.
No? You're just rolling with it.
Well, I mean, I know the game. I know, you know, first-year agents shouldn't expect to make as much as a third or fourth year or fifth or sixth year, right? So it's like, and when they started, I gave them those expectations. Like, the first year, you're not going to make any money. It's just, you know, it takes, like we just talked about, it takes 3 months to close a deal.
Yeah.
And that's from the time you get a contract signed. Right. Before that, you have to write an LOI, which is a letter of intent. That could take a month or two to get done. Before that, you have to find a property. That could take a month or two. So it's like start to finish, you're at 6 months from the time you get a client to the time you get any money.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just not going to make money the first year because of that time frame. But then the second year, make a little bit more, because now some of those people from months 4, 5, and 6 are starting to hit in the second year. And then the third year, you'll make more because you have more of a buildup and you're doing that. So, I mean, I could teach commercial real estate to a monkey in an hour. Like, it's just, it's not difficult.
Primates right? are pretty smart, though.
Exactly. But it's just not a difficult thing to do. It's more of, you have to be willing to work hard, and essentially like any sales job, you have to prospect. Mm-hmm. You know, that's 90% of it is prospecting. In terms of how to treat clients and how to be ethical and how to get deals done, it's just not that difficult.
Yeah. Well, and they're learning from, you know, you and Robert, and it sounds like you guys have a very good focus and a very good direction. It's not that brutal, you know, hand over hand. It's very much you're teaching them how to be humans and how to support individuals. Is that a competitive industry in this area, commercial real estate?
I mean, yeah, because there's only X number of listings. There's more than plenty to go around. But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's not competitive where it's like I'm running into the same people every day and we're walking to the same listing appointments every day. Like, there's a lot of that. But, you know, and if you're not doing your job well, your listing is going to get lost. Somebody yeah. else is going to come get your listing. If you have a one-year listing agreement and you don't do a good job, but you don't get it leased out or sold, someone's going to call them. And yeah. someone's going to say, I could do a better job. So in that sense, it's competitive. In terms of like your standard deals, I think by and large, 90% of agents get the big picture if we're trying to work together to get a deal done versus trying to win the deal. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes it a lot easier.
Nice. What particular, is there a particular area that you focus on or that you tend to have more opportunities or just kind of Phoenix, Arizona as a whole?
I mean, I personally don't, but you know, our agents, we have one that's more of a multifamily guy. We have one that's more of an industrial guy. So it's we do have people that are more focused in certain areas. For me, I kind of overview everything.
Yeah. But that's good. If you have agents that have a particular focus, then you know who to kind of send opportunities to.
Exactly. So when I get an industrial deal, I'll kind of push it off towards the industrial person. If I get a retail deal, I'll kind of push it off towards the retail person. So.
Gotcha. Nice. So I do have another question back to you when you said that you have the two newer folks on your team. Yes, you're there 24/7. I mean, you have to sleep at some point, but yes, you're there to help them ask questions. Is there any particular guidance as far as maybe classes or something that you have them take? Is there any kind of bottom line of, okay, you have to do these particular courses to have a better idea?
We have a training program to start.
Okay.
I mean, it's more of on your own type of a situation. So you can go as fast or as slow as you want. So it typically takes 3 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
But even when you do that, there's a lot of questions involved in that mm-hmm. because it's a lot of going out and seeing. It's a lot of learning. It's to learn it from scratch there's a huge learning curve, right? But in the first 3 to 6 months, you're going to get 90% of it down. Mm-hmm. And then after the 90%, then you're really just learning every deal is different in its own way. So it takes a while to be like, oh, I've seen this happen in a deal before. Because you might go through 20 deals and they're all different. So by deal 20, you're still learning something new the same way you were deal one.
Absolutely.
You just don't realize it, right? But to understand the language of the first deal, that's what takes that 3 to 6 months. And that's really just going out, seeing it, feeling it, touching it. The more conversations you could have with people, the more commercial real estate people you can either talk to or the more people you can call and say, hey, I have a client interested in this. And then you start hearing the numbers and the triple nets and the modified grosses and all that stuff. And then it all of a sudden becomes second nature to say it, in certain ways. Whereas when you first start, you're like, you said CAM. What does CAM mean?
Or you're saying a lot of things right now. And I'm like, I don't know what any
exactly.
of this
so
is.
It's like, so at the beginning, that's where you got to kind of sit down and teach them what it means and give them situations or examples of what different things could mean. But then, within a few months at the most, I mean, they have those terms down cold. Nice. Where they're having those phone calls with other agents. They're not as nervous anymore. So it's really just getting over the hump of the first couple where it's like, I don't know what I'm talking
right?
about.
Making
some
flashcards.
I'll listen to their phone call with them. you were perfect. I didn't feel like I knew what I was saying. You said everything right. So it's just getting the confidence of when to use terminologies and acronyms where it's like, you just don't trust yourself. And then after one or two calls, you're like, oh, I got this.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and them knowing the terminology and then like you said earlier, being able to educate that to the folks that you're working with so that they understand the terminology. I might have a small business and be ready to find a location and need a commercial realtor, but I have no idea. My husband and I are looking at where we want to move right now. And I'm like, I have no idea.
and that's kind of like the person I talked to yesterday that wanted to open the business that I have to, kind of slow down and break it down and give them the whole process and let them know, with them, they were so far at the beginning. It was like, you guys need a business plan before I can even show you anything because you need to tell me a budget. You don't know the budget because you don't know on your profit margins and your nets and your grosses yet.
Oh, wow.
They're so far at the beginning. But that's what people like to do is jump ahead and be like, okay, how much is rent going to cost me so I could throw that in the business plan?
Gotcha.
Whereas sometimes that works, but then sometimes you're manipulating the number to make it work. Whereas it's better if you have the business plan and tell me the number that works. Because if I tell you $5,000 a month and you're making $6,000 a month, you're like, well, I could get $5,000 a month in.
So they were more or less meeting with you to be able to have an understanding of those numbers. They weren't necessarily ready to get a place right now.
Well, they thought they were. They wanted to get a number of how much is this going to cost me for rent. And then I can put that into my business plan. And then we can figure out how much other money we're making and see if we could afford the rent.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just tell me what you could afford, maybe it's a smaller place. But at least we know that's what works within your budget. If I just tell you a number, you can manipulate it and it almost never works out well.
Yeah.
So you give me the number first. So, but when I'm telling them about the process, I'm like, the first thing we do is we write an LOI. And I'm like, that's a letter of intent. So it's like, you kind of have to slow down. By the third or fourth conversation, even with clients, I'm like, okay, we're getting ready to have the LOI, or they'll start saying the terms back to me.
Nice.
I'm like, all right, good. Got that one.
Nice. Is there another example of kind of a unique situation or a unique deal that maybe was unique or that you liked or maybe that you didn't like? You don't have to tell anyone that was theirs. But any examples of interesting deals and whatnot that you've worked on?
I mean,
that's a unique one. The conversation the other day, because I would have thought that by the time people get to you, they kind of have their ducks in a row and they're ready
right.
to
I
go.
Mean, a lot of right. I mean, if they're startups, a lot of times it's what level of startup are you at? Are you at that level, which is like beginning? Are you at the startup where you've talked to the bank and you're just kind of formalizing? Are you doing a franchise agreement where it's, you know, something like that? So, I mean, unique-wise, I've just done so many, I probably can't think of any off the top of my head. They're all unique. They really are. And I think that's a big difference with commercial and residential, and probably why I got into commercial besides my economics background is I just can't walk around a house with someone and be like, man, everything's perfect, but the paint is wrong. You're like, that would drive me bananas to hear that. And commercial is like, they're all unique. So everybody's going to have that situation where you walk into a property and the first thought is going to be, I need to move that wall over there, whether it's for office space or a restaurant. It's like, this is a good kitchen. I need mine a little bit bigger, industrial space. Or it's like, you have one office and 25,000 square feet. I'm going to need to build out 3,000 square foot of office and 22,000 of warehouse. So everyone's just a little bit different, you know, and the clients are all a little bit different and the landlords are all different and owners are different. So they're all unique in their own way.
How does that work when there's a location that has a landlord too, but you are working with somebody to find some commercial space? How does that relationship work, or does that dynamic work? Is the landlord super involved or not involved?
Well, usually the landlord has representation on their side, a listing agent, and then you, for the most part, go through the listing agent. You know, if things get dicey or the listing agent's out of town for any period and you're really close to ending a deal, then maybe you'll go straight to the owner. But by and large, the owner-landlord, you have that one degree of separation through the listing agent.
Gotcha. And then do most people, how do they find you? You said that you, at this point, you guys have a pretty good network of, you know, getting referrals, but how do they find you? Or is it just referrals through other people?
We have a lot of people that just find us online. If you Google, we actually won 2019 Best Commercial Real Estate Company in Tempe.
No way.
Yeah.
Nice. So, congratulations.
Thank you. So that goes online. Just Google the website, you know, prospecting. We have, you know, a lot of good agents that are just out there making phone calls, getting our name out, going to networking events and stuff like that. I mean, we're not one of the bigger national companies that's going to have TV commercials and billboards and, you know, stuff like that. We're kind of that smaller family.
Yeah, but sometimes you don't need all of the big billboards and things like
that. No, and we're also not in their competition level, right? Like, we're not looking to represent the guy who owns property in Phoenix, LA, Chicago, New York.
Gotcha.
You know, we're looking for the people who are, for the most part, locally based.
Gotcha.
You know, for the most part, have properties here looking to invest in Phoenix, you know, more along those lines.
So what are the goals that you guys have, that you and Robert have for your company and your company's growth?
Our goals are always, you know, to grow it with good agents. And that's kind of like the team we're looking at is we sat down, we've talked to their team leader a few times and just they're online with like our ethics, our standards, our goals, and really to just help them grow. That's kind of why they're looking at us as their move is we could help them grow more than the bigger firms can.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I want to make sure I hit on some of the other questions that I have from your notes before coming in here today. So one of the things that I have here is, what services do you guys offer at your company to the CRE buyer, lease and seller? What does CRE stand for?
Commercial real estate.
Okay, just checking. I figured through the conversation.
So really the only thing we don't do is property management.
Okay.
That's a whole different animal, and that's something we just don't do. But we do buyer rep, tenant rep, we do landlord rep, we do owner rep. So we do both sides, buy, sell, leases.
Nice. A one-stop shop. You guys have it all.
Yeah. We got somebody who does everything.
I love it. So are there any other things that you want to kind of bring up in our conversation that maybe we haven't touched upon? Or if people are listening, you know, what are those messages that you want to get out to them?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing I could say, like the way our company was founded and like our one kind of big thing that I tell all of our new agents or anyone that I hire is I tell them there's two ways to get fired from us. It's like, one is if you don't produce, because like, even though you don't get a paycheck, it still costs me money to have you on board, right?
Yeah.
Like there's still technology, there's still software, like it still costs me money.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way is if I ever find out that you missed a family event, whether it's your kid's baseball game or a play or a musical, if I find out you missed that for work, I'll fire you.
Ooh.
Because it's just, this job's just not that hard. Like one off, you have a client in town from Mexico and he's here for one day and it kind of coincides with something, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But to have that happen more than once or twice, then there's something wrong. Then you're working too hard.
I absolutely love that you make that known to the agents and the staff that you have, because it goes to show the values and the culture that you and Robert are trying to create within your company, which I think is fantastic. You know, especially right before we went on, we were talking about your boys and baseball and your 12-year-old golfs. You know, there's life outside of the job that you're doing. And I love that you guys are creating a company that meshes both of those worlds
together. Right. The goal for us is to have people come work for us that are never going to want to leave.
Yeah.
Right. Like come and commercial real estate's one of those jobs you could do till you're 90. It's mm-hmm. not a grinding job, 9 to 5, where you're just, it's too much. And if it is, then it is, because some people I know do that and they're gray and bald when they're 40, right? So we don't want that. Like we want people to stay with us for a long time and be happy with their jobs. If you need to work from home, right?
Yeah.
If you don't need to drive to work, don't drive to work. If you need to get something done or you have a doctor's appointment, don't drive to the office, spend 45 minutes driving there, get a half hour work done, drive to your doctor's appointment for a half hour, drive back for a half hour, get 45 minutes worth of work done and go home. Like you got an hour's worth of work done.
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather you just stay home, get whatever work you can get done, probably 4 or 5 hours, and go to your doctor's appointment when you have to. You don't have to approve that with me.
Right. And I'm sure it helps the overall feel of being there and having, you know, employees that are part of that company is it takes the stress. They're grown adults.
Right.
They've got stuff. Go right. to the doctor and then come back.
Right. I know what they're doing based on the deals they have in play, the prospects they have in play, the numbers that they're producing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need you to check it every day. I don't even need you to really check it every week. You know, like when I need you, I'll let you know.
Nice.
Other than that, you're a grown up. You can do what you want.
Can you tell pretty much in the beginning if somebody is going to be a right fit with your team? Or have you ever had anyone that just really didn't mesh with the values and the culture that you guys have? You don't have to say their name.
Right, I was going to say, I don't think we haven't had anybody. I mean, we've had people not work out, but it's more of like, I think people get into kind of like what you said earlier, where they think it's almost like a hobby.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not a hobby. Like when I tell you you could work from home, that doesn't mean work for an hour, watch TV for an hour, eat lunch for an hour, work for 15 minutes, watch TV for an hour. Like it's 9 to 5, right?
Yeah.
So if you're at home, it's still 9 to 5.
You're still doing it.
All right. You need to go pick your kid up at 3 o'clock. That's fine. And that's essentially like the time it would take you to drive to the office. But when you're at home, it's not watching TV playing on your laptop. It's
mm-hmm.
you still have to go out and prospect. You still have to do all that kind of stuff. You still, you know, so that's probably the biggest hurdle that people don't get is like, oh, he didn't make me come to the office. So here I am and I have nothing to do.
Yeah.
Like,
but like you said, you can see on the back end if there's things happening.
Oh, I could see it. And I talked to them.
Yeah.
Over and over and over and over and over and gave them different ideas to process. Because not everybody's going to pick up a phone, right,
mm-hmm.
and make cold calls. Not everybody's going to send cold emails. Not everybody wants to go to networking events. Not everybody wants to golf every day. So it really just depends on who you are and what works for you. So mm-hmm. let's find something that works for you. And whatever works for you, let's do that.
Yeah.
Right? And you have to have more than one area of process. You can't just cold call. You can't just send out emails. You know, you have to have different levels. But let's find something that you like doing, that you're good at. Let's start there. And then we'll build off of that.
Are the cold calls and networking events a huge part of getting started? And maybe for the newer people that don't have as many referrals, but is that a big part of that job?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I mean, it's a tried and true method.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of going away a little bit more, you know, slowly because mm-hmm. obviously, with the internet expanding, if I need a commercial real estate, I just type in commercial real estate Phoenix and see what companies pop up.
Yeah.
Cold calling is it's the same as it's always been, right? Like, you need timing. So you need to call an owner that's looking to sell in a short time frame. Because if you called him 3 months ago, well, maybe he wasn't looking to sell 3 months ago. But now you called him and he is looking. So now it works out. But you don't know unless you pick up the phone and call. You don't know unless you send that email, right?
Yeah.
You don't know unless you door knock and go to these business owners and introduce yourself and say who you are and build that relationship with them. So it's like you have to be out there doing something.
Yeah. So when you say cold call, you really mean you're just picking up the phone and you have no idea if that business is going to sell or move. It really is a complete cold call.
Right. I mean, you know what you're looking for, right? You could build your list to being like, I'm an office specialist guy, right? So I'm going to call every office in Tempe that owns their property and see if they're looking to sell it.
Gotcha.
But I have no idea if they actually want to sell it, no idea about any of that. I mean, I could go door knocking to every office and just introduce myself, let them know who I am, a little bit about myself, and that's a much better way than cold calling.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about a numbers game, you can make 50 cold calls in 2 hours. You can't knock on 50 doors in 2 hours and build that relationship and talk to people. So it's just, you know, which avenue do you want to go? And maybe one day you do one and maybe one day you do the other. And maybe one day you follow up on by doing one. So it's just a matter of going out and prospecting.
Yeah.
And how to get that done.
How much time does that take? Like, is there a percentage of your day or your week that you just dedicated to looking for new prospects?
Almost all of it. I mean, when you're working on a deal,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of be a little bit more reactive to what's going on in that deal to know how much time you need to put into that deal.
Mm-hmm.
So to show somebody a property or to do a tour of a property if somebody's coming to see one of your listings, obviously that takes out of your day and you just have to do it. But you can't set ahead of time like 20 hours I'm going to do this and 20 hours I'm going to do that. What happens if for 20 hours you don't have tours to do?
Yeah.
Well, you're not going to just sit there and do nothing. You should always be thinking that prospecting needs to be done all the time and everything else kind of flows into the day. And you just mm-hmm. have to stop prospecting for a couple hours to go do a tour of a property. If, you know, a contractor, an LOI comes across your desk, again, it's just not that complicated to read these things and scratch off what you need to and send them back.
Mm-hmm.
So to get that kind of stuff, even to write an LOI, it's just not complicated. Everybody at every company has their own boilerplate one. So you're really just filling in new dates, times, terms, and names. It just doesn't take that long. So it'd take a half hour out of your day to do that. The rest of your day should be prospecting. And maybe one day you have five of them to do. Okay, so you take 2 hours out of your day, but the rest of it should be prospecting.
But it seems like for the most part, every day for you is going to be completely different with prospects and paperwork and your LOIs. See, I'm learning the lingo.
There you go. See, less than a day.
I mean, that's probably the... I can assume from the outside that to me, that would be the part of the job that I would like the most is the flexibility. It's different. Every day is going to be something new.
Right. So for people who do block scheduling, mm-hmm. it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
Because to say every Tuesday from 11 to 12, this is what I'm doing.
It's not going to work.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it might work and you might be able to schedule around it, but I just find that for me, that's almost impossible. So it's like on a Tuesday, I might schedule prospecting from 9 to 12 and calling or going out, meeting people, whatever it is. But if I have a client that wants to submit an LOI or I need to talk to a title person for a contract, like, okay, then if I'm out door knocking, I'll sit in my car and I'll get that done.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so I took a half hour out of my door knocking time, but now I was able to do two things. I certainly wasn't going to say from 9 to 12 I'm prospecting, but 10 to 10:30 I have allotted to contract time.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I like that. So I do have a question about, like, right now you do have that background in economics. And so you'll hear people say, as far as like residential real estate, you'll hear, oh, this is a good time to buy or a good time to sell or the market is, you know, good. Does that happen with commercial or is it just kind of it's the same all the time? Or do you have these ups and downs as well?
There's definitely the ups and downs, right? But that kind of comes back to one of your earlier questions about like different sectors and specializations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you want to talk about like the investment market here with apartments. So 3 years ago, you were able to get those at just average probably a 7, 7.5 cap, which is your rate of return.
Okay.
In California, you know, that time ago, you were probably getting them closer to a 5 cap for your rate of return. Fast forward to now, in Phoenix, you're looking closer to like a 5.5. And in California, you're looking at like a 2.5.
Oh.
So when you're getting 2.5% return on your money, it's not as good of a time to invest as if you're getting 5 or 7%.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still better off than California in that way, but we're certainly not as well off as we were 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the investors are like, well, why would I pay to get that 5.5 cap today when I could have got 7.5 2 years ago? It's like, well, because now we're not 2 years ago. Right?
Yeah. Times are changing.
Right. Eventually that's going to fall off because that number is going to get so low. People are going to be like, well, I'm just not going to invest anymore. And then it's supply and demand. So if nobody's investing at those numbers, you have to bring it back up to a number that they will invest in. And that's kind of the ebbs and flows of that. So it's going to get to one of those points pretty soon.
Gotcha.
In that area. You know, when you talk about industrial, like they build industrial so fast in the Phoenix market that they can't hold it.
Oh, every area, there's always a new building here, a new building there.
Right.
Everything.
And they're all pre-sold.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have leasers in place before they even build them. I mean, that stuff gets absorbed so fast. You go to some of these towns, they're expanding like nuts, like Queen Creek. They don't even have industrial. They're starting to build it.
Interesting.
So, you know, so I get clients like, I want to be in Queen Creek. I'm like, great, there is nothing. There will be if you wait a year.
Try again.
Right. So it just kind of depends on the market. Then obviously specific to different, you know, little areas, whether it's Tempe or Gilbert or Glendale when, you know, for office space or whatever. But it's definitely there. It's not as much, I don't think, as residential because people don't look at it every single day. But yeah, there's definitely ups and downs.
Gotcha. Interesting. Well, thank you again for letting me ask some very amateur questions. It's interesting because it's not, you know, it's not an area that I'm familiar with. It's not, you know, a career path that I would know anything about. So it's really nice to be able to talk to somebody like you that has that background. You are the owner of this company. And, you know, to see the growth that you and Robert have been able to do is pretty fantastic. So before we wrap up, do you have any other last thoughts or anything that you want to share? And then I'll also, after that, have you let our listeners know how they can reach you if they are interested.
I don't really have any other last thoughts.
Nice. Well, if people are listening and they want to get in contact with you, how would they do that?
If you want to get in contact, you could always go to our website. It's www.royalcre.com. So it's like commercialrealestate.com. And if you click on the info address, email address, that actually comes right to me. So if you need to get a hold of me or if you have any questions and you can't find my email address, which all of ours should be on there and phone numbers, but if you want to just send a basic question through that way, I'll get it that way.
So. Awesome. Well, I think that's all the ways that people can reach out to you. So fantastic. Thank you again, Mitch, for being here. This was fantastic. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism, Arizona, Business Radio X studio. Some media leans left, some lean right. We lean business. Until next time, this is Kendra Maples. Thank you for listening.